But every time I go on TikTok, it's the same BS all the time. And there are other advisors that I know that are totally trying to rebut this thing and like try to go out there like spread the word because it's such BS.
Didn't guy come on the show and try to tell us to do that?
And I had to call him out like after 5 minutes. I was like, pal, stop. You and I both know that when you sell the product that you're pushing, that's the highest rate of return that we as advisors can put in our pockets. You know that, Jamie. I mean, besides annuities, variable products, and life insurance, that's a ticket, baby.
Entertainment purposes only. You'd be an idiot to listen to anything these degenerates say. Invest at your own risk, do research, but seriously don't listen to these ass clowns. Now enjoy Cash Daddies.
And welcome to Cash Daddies. We're banking fatties. We're in it to win it today, bro. Feeling good. Happy to be here. Join me as always, Juicy Johnny.
What's up, dude? How's it going?
Juicy Johnny, love and water. Thank you for joining us, Johnny. And then on the from parts unknown, places unknown, in front of some wonderful China, everybody. Oh, whoa, Dewey's what? Dewey's what? What does that say?
Dewey's pub.
Damn. Wow.
We're diversifying. We're diversifying.
Howie Dewey, everybody. Howie Dewey.
Oh, at least he got his full name. That's nice. I'm just
what did I say
Johnny
to you?
Now for the rest of my life.
Oh, Johnny Woodard. Come on. Say hi to Sal in the back, man. That guy is always working. He never.
Sal's always working.
I love your China collection, by the way, Howie. That's
I do
just
too,
beautiful.
Bro.
You have a lovely collection of China. Fine China there.
It's my dad's girlfriend. Yeah.
I don't even know what that means, bro. I don't even know what that means.
I think I do. I think
Dude,
I do.
Me opening up a pub, that would be like, I can't even, that would be like just like piling like 10 tons of cocaine and just letting all.
That'd
of
be
it.
Like Tom Sizemore opening up a crack house.
Right. Yeah. If I opened a pub, it would probably be open for 2 to 3 weeks.
Hey, yeah. You know what's speaking of reopening? Do you know what might be reopening in word on the street and the streets are talking? Do you remember King Subs in Cortland?
Dude, that was Skip's place. That was Skip's
I think
place.
His daughter's opening up Queen Subs.
Allison?
I hope to God, because that's my favorite sub. It's
God,
the best on planet
that?
Earth. It's not
no,
even close.
Those subs were huge.
And they're so good, bro. Yeah. I was like, man, I'd love to franchise this because it's so good.
The salt and pepper. They use some spices, right? Those subs were amazing.
Yeah. Skip so me. Now when I go home and get my Pudgy's pizza and my sub.
Yeah,
I gotta hit Rex's too. So that's the trifecta. Oh, four. I have to do four. I have to do the cycle. King sub, which is me, Queen Subs, Pudgy's pizza. The Hollywood, and
oh,
then
yeah.
The Hollywood and a pasta is the greatest thing on planet Earth. And then I have to hit Rex's for their pasta. So bang.
The Hollywood's still open?
Oh yeah, dude. My grandpa always wanted to buy it. They would never sell it to him.
Burned down a while back. I know they rebuilt it. But fucking Skip owned the tavern. That was my favorite bar in Cortland, the tavern.
His son, Boise Thomas, is out in L.A.
His son is out there. Well, his daughter was in Vegas.
Well, I don't know. She must move back because it looks like Queen Subs is opening, which I'm excited about, bro.
Yeah, man. I got to get back to Cortland. They play the Ithaca game is at Cortland this year, so I may head up. It's in Cortland.
That's great. So how's your week, Howie?
It's a good week, man. We crushed the VIX. We bought UVIX. I even talked little Robbie Bernstein into buying some UVIX on a Wednesday. He bought it. I called him Thursday. I said, sell it. You're up 20%, yo. We crushed the VIX. You know, we're about to jump back in it. I mean, it's back low. This thing's just trading in a pattern where you can bank fatty. So things are looking good.
Guys, you can get all that more at patreon.com/cashdaddies. Howie is always dropping fire on there. I mean, Idiot Savant, heavy on the Idiot, just doing amazing things over there, and everybody's loving it. Howie Dewey is probably one of the greatest to ever do it.
We're banking, man. And I mean, it's just the next 2 weeks are going to be nice. We went in deep, bought some stuff today. Tomorrow's the big, the CPI number comes out.
Everybody's CPI number.
Yeah. Consumer price index. We want it to be low. If it's high, the market goes down, which is fine. That's more opportunity. I don't think it's going to be, hopefully it'll help volatility pick up a little bit, but everybody's concerned now about, what are we going to do, Congress? The debt ceiling. What about the debt ceiling? Nobody gives
Are you talking about gay men? Sounds like gay men are worried about the debt ceiling. Is that what you're doing?
I would say most of Congress is probably along those lines. You got packers on both sides. You got Democratic packers. You got Republican packers. Everybody's packing hard on the Hill.
I don't get it, though. They always make the deal. They never don't raise the debt ceiling. It happens every time. Why is the market afraid of it?
I got a stat for you right here. Since 1981, the debt ceiling has gone steadily straight up. But here's the thing. From 1981, you had Carter. Carter, Reagan, Bush, and Clinton. The debt ceiling didn't go up that much. Went up a little bit through those four presidents.
But they always make the deal, is what I'm saying. They never don't do it when they have to.
It's getting tougher, though, because since they brought in Georgie Bushy Jr., George Bush Jr., Obama, and Trump, those three motherfuckers, have the amount of money that those three ass clowns have spent over the past 20 years is insane. Like, the first four presidents from 81, Carter, it went like this. And as soon as Georgie Bush Jr. and then Obama and Trump never vetoed a fucking spending bill. Trump spent more money than anybody. Just here you go. You know, and I'm sure Biden will try to beat his record. But the debt ceiling has gone straight up. But Johnny made a good point. They always end up getting the deal done. You know?
It's just anxiety for the sake of anxiety, theater for the sake of theater.
The market doesn't give a shit. The market doesn't even look at what happens. The market doesn't care.
It's amazing, though, all the effects of 2001. I mean, that's another effect of 9/11. Because that gave Bush the excuse to just do literally whatever he wanted with the economy and the military. And we just forgot about that was the reason. You know, we forgot that before that, even Bill fucking Clinton, you know, operated in the green and tried to keep the debt down.
Let me
and
tell now, you something. I mean, you look at the chart, Johnny. You look at the debt ceiling chart. Bill Clinton probably had the best record of anybody as far as the debt ceiling not going up. Budgets were on time. They stayed low. The spending didn't pick up until Georgie Bush Jr. took over. And then those checkbooks fucking just are between him and Obama. Oh my God.
Yeah. It's like just nobody gives a shit anymore.
No, Trump was probably worse than both of them. He never vetoed a spending, but you know, that's what people need to realize, man. Listen, readers, listeners, they don't care about you. I don't care if you're Republican, they don't give a fuck.
I agree.
Here's your chart, by the way. How do you look at this? I mean, it's just flat till 2000, and then we're on a ride here. Look at this.
Georgie Bush Jr. just sent that thing to the moon.
Yeah.
Look at it now.
They all suck, dude.
They all suck. Both parties fucking blow. They're immature. They're stupid. It's like, come on. They care about one thing, man. Their own families, and that's it.
And then you've got guys like, you know, economists like Krugman saying that it doesn't even matter. It's just all funny money at this point. You know, none of this. He thinks that they should just get rid of the debt ceiling was what he was coming out with today.
It's tough to disagree with that. I mean, it's a joke. It's like, come on. I mean, the government, I understand the bureaucracy and why things are so big and it's difficult to budget, blah, 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 whatever. But when you're just sending trillions of dollars to, you know, don't get me started. I mean, overseas, forget about Ukraine. What we've given Ukraine is a drop in the bucket, but you know, that's a whole different thing. I don't know, but it's going to get done. Like Johnny says, it's weighing on people more than the market. The market doesn't give a shit. Really doesn't. It's
more I just look, I just wish whoever's in the White House would just be like to the Federal Reserve, oh, fuck you. We're not paying you back anything, dude. That'd be the best. That'd be the best. What are we? We're not going to pay you back. And then just nuke the Federal Reserve. Call it a day.
I mean, I don't know. The thing is, it'll never happen because they're all in fucking bed with each other.
Yeah.
I mean, the Fed.
It's all funny money, fake bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. And all I do is try to read between the lines and find out which companies are going up and which ones are going down. And
That's why you're the best.
You got to put all that other shit out, because if you start really watching what goes on with the government and the debt ceiling and where money's being, you'll fucking lose your mind. It's just these people, if they ever ran a business, it'd be bankrupt in a month.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Know? So here's an interesting story, just because the economics. So the NBA, is getting stupid money, right? And they're talking about Giannis, the Greek freak, next year can sign a 2-year contract worth, are you ready? $112 million.
Crazy.
For 2 years. That's amazing. Now, the whole thing is this is what is getting really interesting. And, you know, I think this strike with the Writers Guild, if it goes long enough, which I don't think it will, but if it does, it could change television. I mean, we were discussing this last night on Broken Sim that will be out on Friday. I personally think that this will be a great time for them to get rid of these late night talk shows because they're spending so much money on it and nobody's watching it.
What if they replaced them with AI writers? That's possible in the future.
Isn't that somewhat the issue right now? Is like,
the main issue is this, and I sat down with someone that knows about this, and this is what they told me. And because it's confusing for the readers out there, you don't know what the hell the Writers Guild, why they're going on strike. I didn't.
Well, they want points, right? They want points.
Well, it's like this, Johnny.
Because we don't have residuals anymore.
It's like this. If you're a writer and you're writing for Yellowstone, okay, you and your writer sitting around a table, and over the year, Johnny, you write 20 episodes. You write 20 episodes for Paramount, which creates Yellowstone. Now, they're not going to use all 20 episodes. They're only going to use 10 to 12. Those other 8 are not going to get used. So they're not getting paid for those 8 that they wrote. In other words, they wrote 20 episodes. The writers are like, pay us for 20 episodes that we wrote. And Paramount's like, no, we'll pay you for the ones we use. And that's the big problem.
Oh, snap.
Well, the thing I've heard, too, is that you don't get residuals in the age of streaming. You know, syndication's not a thing anymore, and they're not getting residuals on.
I'm totally for the writers, even though their product is hot garbage right now.
It sucks.
It sucks. And that's why everyone's like, it's just, it's super crazy. But like, if you see like certain things go away, I mean, dude, why, if they could get out of Jimmy Fallon, and he's doing the best out of all of them, they've already expressed they regret signing him to a long-term contract. This would be a great way to get out of it.
Does anybody watch that show?
Well, they say 3 million.
A lot of people do, dude. Middle America loves that guy. They think he's hilarious. Him and Colbert.
Well, it's hilarious because he's up. He was way down. Now I guess he's back up. But the point is, so we go back to the NBA. And the NBA, now the money is getting beyond ridiculous, okay? You have Giannis making over $100 million for 2 years, okay? And I think the highest contract right now is Damian Lillard, which is insane because they can't even make the playoffs with him. Right, like 60 mil, I think he's making
I love Dame.
I love Damian. And listen, I personally have no problems with these guys making this money. Okay. I mean, like if a comic played an arena, he'd probably walk out with a mil, right?
Yeah.
You could see these guys making 82 mil a year. That'd be $1 million a game, right? And you'd be like, okay, if they're packing arenas, why wouldn't they make that? Then you throw television there and all that stuff. I have no problems with that. Here's the issue. At what point does it start to be like, because I don't know if you've seen this, but I think we talked about this before. Bally Sports has filed for bankruptcy. They're not making any money on these fucking, these regional sports networks. What if that goes away? That's a big part of their money. Do we see salaries start to come down? I mean, I know that Amazon is trying to negotiate games on there, which is great, but I mean, which will be a little bump, but I mean, at what point does do they stop going up? Eventually they're going to hit every service they could, right?
But here's the thing, Sam. Let's just use MSG as an example. I go to the Knick game last Sunday. Place holds 20,000, maybe a little more. The average ticket to that game was $1,000 or up, the average ticket. You know, floor tickets were 20, 25,000. 20 row, you're paying 5,000. 40th row, you're paying 2,500. You know, my seats were, they were up there, but shit, my seats were $500 and $550 each.
Yeah.
Average ticket's 1,000. You got 20,000 seats. Do the math. That's $20 million in one day. $20 million. That's not included the $22 beers, the $26 mixed drinks, the $18 hot dogs, the fucking $23 burgers. That's probably another $20 million. Who the hell knows? These guys are making bank. People are still paying these ridiculous prices.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, I agree.
Dude, I was looking at, I just talking about ticket prices now, and this thing, the dynamic pricing model that Ticketmaster has come up with, which makes tickets more expensive when demand increases, has made it so that they're basically scalping their own tickets. They're the scalpers now. That was their solution to scalping. They became the scalpers, because I was went online when these Aerosmith farewell tour, they're touring with the Black Crowes. They're doing a farewell tour, Aerosmith. And I looked at
Oh my God.
I looked at the four. That was my first concert in 97. So I thought I'd go see him off.
Kiss is too. Kiss has a farewell tour too.
Yeah, yeah, they do. Yeah. The Forum I looked at, and then PNC Arena in North Carolina. And the cheapest tickets were $400. They were behind the stage. And then everything else was at least $1,000 in the rest of the arena. For a concert ticket, dude, I'm talking about you could be at the top, the nosebleeds in the Forum, paying like $700-$800 face value. And then the way Ticketmaster does it is you can't sell them, you can't resell them for less than face value. So if the price goes down later and you want to get unload them, you can't even do that.
I'm glad you brought that up, Johnny, because you talk about, and that's another sector, the ticket business. Tickets are insane. My girl bought 4 Beyonce tickets.
Yeah.
She couldn't get them in New York or New Jersey, so she bought them in Miami. And I said, why the fuck did you buy them at? She goes, well, I'll go down there for a 3-day vacation with my friends, and we're going to go see Beyonce. So she to buy the tickets, you got to get on a waiting list.
Yeah.
You got to get in a lottery. Then when the lottery hits, you got to jump in and buy them. She bought 4 tickets. So the tickets were $425 each plus the $150 fee that they add on top of it.
Yeah.
So you got 4 tickets at about $575 each. Buys the tickets. She bought them 2 months ago, the concert's in August. You know what they're selling for right now?
What's that?
$2,400 each.
Fuck.
I told her, I said, sweetie, I know you like Beyonce. I know you're part of the Hive, baby. But I said, you paid about $2,000 for those tickets, $2,400. I said, right now, you can get about $10,000 for them.
Oh my God.
I said, sweetie, look, baby, let's go to a restaurant. We'll just put money in the jukebox all fucking night or whatever.
Yeah, and we'll find a black stripper that looks like Beyonce and have her grind in your face.
We'll fucking find a black stripper. I'll pour Kool-Aid all over your tits and we'll get fucking nutty. Because
it's crazy, dude. You know,
$10,000 she's got. I said, you're a pimp, baby. I said, you should go into this full time, just buying and selling tickets. And they're worth $2,000 now. And a friend of ours that we know that does these tickets, he said, no, man, hold on to them. Come July or August, they'll be $3,000 each.
Damn.
You look,
It's funny though, because if you wait until like the last minute, right before the show, they always go way down. That's when I wait. I usually buy tickets like right before the show. It's the best.
I went to the Knick game last Sunday, man, and it's saw the Knicks. They lost. The tickets, food, everything was probably all together like a $1,200 day.
Damn.
Sam, I know you've been there before. You know, you stay out till 2-3 in the morning. You hook up with a girl. You've had a little too much to drink. Yeah, you may have dealt in a few drugs. I don't know. But you wake up in the morning and you roll over and you look at her and you're just like the feeling of just total guilt and depression. And you're just like, holy shit. You know, she's like 250, 260.
Oh, my God. Are you trying to give him a relapse? What are you doing here? This is
no, I'm just saying. That's what I felt like. I felt like that after going to the Knick game. I was just like, oh, why? I could have watched it at home. I could have watched it at a buddy's house.
We spent all that. I hate it for, like, kids, man. Like, who can afford to take their kids to, you know, their whole family to a game like that? Nobody. Nobody. Not a normal or middle-class family. They can't afford any of this shit anymore.
I don't know how LA is, but you go
breaking news. Let's get exactly the correct what is exactly happening here. Trump has been found guilty of not rape, but sexual assault. It's really weird.
He got guilty of this.
He's liable, not guilty.
He got
so what
little,
does that mean? What
that means that he mean, owes John them in a civil case. He owes him money.
$5 million he's got to pay. He's got to pay $5 million.
If I was him, I'd sue the fuck out of him.
What do you
everybody.
Mean? He got sued.
No, he can't. It's over. That's what, yeah, he got sued. He got sued. I mean, look, there's no doubt that guys held a few women down. I mean, it's happened. It's, but it was a long time ago.
So is Biden, by the way, and that woman came out yesterday saying that, listen, if I get suicided, it wasn't me. I'm not suicidal. She's afraid of the Biden people coming after. Yeah. The woman that's accusing Biden of stuff.
$5 million, bro. Crazy.
Dude, he's got it like that. He's fine.
Yeah, I know, but it's just so nuts. They finally got something to stick.
Yeah, the guy's like the Teflon Don, man.
Yeah.
I mean, is what it is. But,
so, you know, I should have had on today. I'd already booked a guest. We should have had our boy James come on, the Shibu Inu expert, because all he kept telling me was buy Pepe. And you actually heard Elon Musk say, if you have Pepe, hold it. It did insane numbers, supposedly. Have you seen this, Johnny?
What is Pepe? No. Sounds like a little Mexican you're buying.
It's like there's some mega shit going on there.
Is it a stock?
Oh yeah, Pepe, like Pepe the Frog. Yeah, I got
yeah,
it. Of course.
Yeah, yeah. So John, can you look that up real quick? Coin?
The guest is here, by the way, if we want to move on to
all right, let's move on. Okay, we're gonna bring in the guest. Let's go. Hey guys, real quick, we want to talk to you about Copy My Crypto. That's right. Guys, listen. We've seen so many people making ridiculous money from crypto, but did you know it's easy for you to do the same? That's right. The Copy My Crypto membership site shows you the coins that YouTuber James McMahon personally holds and allows you to copy them. It's like having a big brother who knows what he's doing. You don't need to know a thing about crypto or how to invest as you simply do what he does. So let me tell you about James. He runs the Crypto with James YouTube channel, which despite heavy censorship, and we know a lot about that, has over 26,000 subscribers. Since March 2020, he told his viewers to buy 26 crypto coins. Had you put in $100 into each one, it went on to be worth $123,000. Of the 26 coins, his top pick of the year, a coin called Phantom, went up 692 times from when he said. That one call alone has retired a number of people, including guys in their 20s and 30s. Remember, this is public knowledge. You can go to his YouTube and verify for yourself. So if you'd like to join the 2,800 members who copy James, then stop what you're doing and head over to copymycrypto.com/Sam. That's copymycrypto.com/Sam. That's S-A-M. You'll not only find proof of everything I've said, but my listeners get full access for $1. That's right. Our listeners get full access for just $1. Once again, that's copymycrypto.com/Sam. The recession is here, guys. You can suffer like everyone else or choose to thrive. James is a real deal. Go visit his site now. All right, let's bring in our guest. Very excited to have this gentleman on. He is a business owner, been in the game for 20 years. Please welcome Jamie Lima. How are you, Jamie?
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. I'm amazing.
We're very honored and we're very appreciative you spend a little time with us. For our listeners who may not be, well, we call them readers. For our readers who may not be familiar with you, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and where our listeners can find you?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm an East Coast guy, originally born and raised. I'm picking up on a little bit of an accent there, Sam. So I'm going to venture to guess you're on the East Coast as well. But
I grew up in upstate New York. I live in LA right now. Howie's in New York or a part of New York. And Johnny's at WeWork right now. So
very nice. Very nice. Well, I won't hold it against you guys, but thank you. I grew up in Rhode Island. Does anybody know where that is? It's not not an island, not a road. But I'm now in San Diego. I'm on the West Coast, about as far away as I could get without having to swim. So I've been out here like 20
years. San Diego's nice.
San Diego's amazing. And so I've been out here like 25 years or so. I launched, I've been in the financial planning game, financial services industry for a very long time. I started like 2005, 2006-ish with a company called Morgan Stanley. Then I was I know, it was brutal. I think dudes were still smoking in their office. You know,
I was there about 10 years, Jamie.
Oh man. Yeah. Brutal. Only kidding. I have amazing friends that I still know to this day, but,
MS.
And then I went to another company called Fidelity Investments. Probably heard of them. I was there for a long, long time. And then I decided a couple of years back that I, 3 years ago, it'd be 3 years ago in a couple of weeks here, that I decided to launch my own company and kind of chart my own course here.
All right. So you went independent, man. You kind of went like an IJL route.
Yeah. Went totally independent. So the beauty of it is I can kind of make my own rules now, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, knock on wood, the commissions are a little higher, you know, more overhead, but yeah, you make a little more on those rips.
So we want to get into leveraging insurance products.
Let's do it.
You want to tell me about it a little bit? First of all, before we get into it, you know, you were East Coast, you moved to San Diego. It's great. Johnny and I were talking about this last night about how, you know, the big exodus from California, a lot of those people are now moving back because, yeah, they hate, certain politics, they hate the price of living, but at the end of the day, you can't beat the weather, and there's a lot of cool people out here. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think there's something to be said about that. We did raise kids out here, so there's probably a high probability that we'll be spending a lot of time in California. Yeah, but my wife and I, our dream is just to spend the, you know, my youngest is only 10. So when she gets to be like 13, 14, and she's to the point where she's like, I don't want to hang out with dad anyway, you know, because she's almost there. She's almost at that point right now. But we're probably going to do the RV thing for a couple of years and just travel the country to see some spots that I've never seen before. I went from one coast to the other and didn't spend any time anywhere in the middle of the country. So it'd be amazing to go see some of these hidden gems that are here. But
it's a real shithole.
if you come east, I know this really cool spot in the Bronx. You can park your RV.
Oh, fantastic.
Well, I mean, dude, RVs are loved in California. I mean, you just park it somewhere, you never have to move it again.
Yeah, you know what? Sure. To get what Sam just said, and this is wild because we always talk about how the fucking media just you can't believe anything you read in the media. So yeah. Sam's saying, you know, people are moving back to California. And I believe that because I just know people that are moving there.
Yeah.
Of course, the New York Post came out front page 2 days ago and it said California is in deep, deep shit because one of the greatest actors of all time said he's fed up with the crime. He's fed up with the taxes. And Scott Baio from Happy Days is leaving California. And I just said, did they just say one of the greatest actors of all time? I'm like, Scott fucking Baio. I haven't heard that name in three decades.
Scott Baio had a good run, dog. He had a good, we should all have had a run. Seriously, like Scott Baio.
Happy days.
We all had a teen, if we all had a teenage Baio, forget about it.
Pretty yeah. Weird. What is it? Charles in charge, bro? Come on.
I thought you were going to say Mark Wahlberg.
If it was Mark Wahlberg.
No, he's moving too.
He's moving too. He's going to Vegas.
Yeah. Dude, if I'm going to move, I'm going to Reno. I just told you. I mean, like, outside of Miami or Reno's nice, Reno,
that's
bro.
So crazy. That's so random. It's just random as hell. Reno.
Sam, Reno in Sparks, Nevada is the only place I've ever been to in this country that reminds me of upstate New York. Like that lake, that reminds me of, like, upstate New York.
Well, it's got everything that Vegas has, minus the tons of people, which is I'm getting into the get off my lawn mode. Like, get off my lawn. Like, that's where I'm at almost. So you, the mean, less yeah, people, the better.
It's a, right? It's a flight from anywhere, though. You have to get on a plane to go anywhere.
I don't care. It's an hour flight to LA if I want to come back and enjoy too many people. It's fine. It's fine.
That's such a I'll weird. There's anyway. A reason a lot of people don't live there. I'll just say that.
Do you want to get into Reno here? I mean, we have Jamie here. Jamie didn't come here to
you
talk
brought
about
it up.
Reno.
I did talk about Reno. I've never been. I want to know all about it. Tell me.
Reno's great, bro. What happened to Reno was when the Indian casinos opened up, it took a giant hit. It took a giant hit. And what you've seen now is a bunch of development out there of these new classier hotels that look nice. Downtown is just like any place. It looks like a zombie apocalypse. Just the difference is Reno's all have handicapped zombie apocalypse. That's what it is. Guys with canes and wheelchairs.
What does you that know, mean?
That's it.
What do you mean? By, is it like a, just a lot of old people? Is that what you're saying?
A lot of wheelchairs and a lot of people with canes down there just walking around yelling brains the whole time. Brain. That's all it is. But when you go to these nice other places, the casinos are great. They're gorgeous, dude. They're gorgeous. So the point is, it's a small place. You got everything you need there. And it's a hop, skip, and jump away from everything else. Just get on a plane. The airport's amazing. It's called international. There's nobody there. It's great.
Biggest little city in the world, right?
For sure, dude. I mean, if Vegas is starting to get too big, it's having water problems. That's not Reno. Reno has Lake Tahoe, has all the water from the mountains coming down. But anyways, let's get into insurance. Talk to me about this.
Oh, I mean, my initial thoughts on the insurance piece was when you had it, you know, prepping for this call today, you were like, give me some of the shit that you're seeing out there. And one of them was this insurance, leveraging insurance, like as a bank account or something for, you know, like, I'm seeing stuff all over TikTok. Well, I'm not even really on TikTok. I mean, I think I have like six videos on TikTok, but every time I go on TikTok, it's the same BS all the time. And there are other advisors that I know that are totally trying to rebut this thing and like try to go out there, like spread the word, because it's such BS. I don't know if you guys see it or not, but you know,
we had a guy on the show and try to tell us to do that. And I had to call him out like after 5 minutes. I was like, pal, stop. You and I both know that when you sell the product that you're pushing, that's the highest rate of return that we as advisors can put in our pockets. You know that, Jamie. Yeah. I mean, you know, besides annuities, variable products and life insurance, that's a ticket, baby.
You hit it, Howie. And like your comment earlier, though, the commissions and everything, the beauty of being independent and we're fee only. So we don't deal with commissions. We don't have any sales quotas or any of that stuff. The only fee that our clients pay us is the advice, the fee for the advice that we're providing them. Right. There's no trading costs. There's no nothing. It's so transparent. It's as far as I'm concerned, doing this, you know, creeping up on 20 years now, it's the way it should be. And you know, you have all these kids that are out there, and I say kids because, you know, like I'm getting some gray hairs here and everything else. But you know, these like our clients are, for the most part, the clients that we work with are like 30 to 50 years old, pretty young, right? Compared to the old days, probably you know how we work with. You know, the, you know, 60, 65 plus that we'd work with at companies like Morgan Stanley. I'm working with a much younger crowd now, and they bring this stuff to me all the time. And sometimes you just like want to beat your, it's like banging your head against the wall because you're like, what is this stuff that these people are touting out there that have no right or to even share this information? They don't even know how this stuff works.
Jamie, there's a kid on YouTube and he does TikTok also. He and Twitter. He's got like 180,000 followers. He lists himself as a financial advisor because he's got his real estate license and his Series 65.
Yeah.
That's it. This guy doesn't have his 7. He doesn't have his life accident health. He doesn't have any kind of a, you know, even started CFP. He's been doing it a couple of years, and this kid is like, please call me. I can tell you how to get wealthy using life insurance, mutual funds, and real estate. And I'm thinking in my head, you just named 3 fucking things that I wouldn't even mention to a client unless I sat down and find out what their needs were. It just blows my mind.
1,000%. 1,000%. Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
And you're seeing, like you said, you're seeing this shit with the internet. You're seeing, I would say, 1 out of every 3 things you see is a scam. I think it's a scam.
I would agree. And you know, and here's the thing. And then you have people like, you know, like us who are, you know, it's like it's myself and a team of 4 other advisors that are just trying to do the right thing. And, and you know, I'm like, I don't walk on water. Don't get me wrong. I'm like, I'm not perfect by any stretch of imagination, but we're trying our best to do the right thing by the people that we work for and with. And then you have these people out here and there people are banging down their door to do business with them. And we're sitting here just scrambling for every opportunity we have.
Right. And, it, you know, we started this podcast, Sam and I, about 2 years ago. And for the first year, all I preached, and I still do, when someone calls me and says, Howie, I'm 27 years old, I got 8,000, give me something to invest in. I ask one question first. You got a Roth IRA set up? That's it. That's it. You got a Roth set up? No, I don't. Well, you know what? Let's get one set up and let's put some money in there. We'll go from there. Do you own a business? Yeah, I do. Do you have a SEP IRA set up? No, what's that? Let's just start there and move on, man, because if those are the 2, I mean, you know more than me, you're doing it right now. There's no other vehicle that I know of better than those 2. If you own a business or if you're a young person, you want to put in money and take it out tax-free someday.
100%. And it's the same thing with, you know, the other thing I mentioned in prep for this call is, you know, people are trying to, it's the ancillary to the insurance gurus that are out there spouting all this BS. It's the, oh, set up an LLC for some fictitious company that you're not even doing, you're not even operating, so you can save on taxes too.
Yeah.
Like, you don't understand, like, how do you not understand that? Like, if you just did a simple search for LLC, just Google it, right? What is an LLC? It's going to tell you it's for liability protection and has nothing really to do with the tax component of it, right? So, and to your point about if you did have an actual legitimate business and you were able to set up an LLC, then you opened up the doors to other things like self-employed 401ks and SEP IRAs and so on and so forth. But yeah, man, I mean, it's like to your point, you got to start from with the basics. The basics are like we just, my 20-year-old stepson, we just had this conversation with him over the last weekend. We set up a Roth IRA for him when he was 18, and you know, we've helped him contribute to that so we can get him, you know, a head start. And I just had a conversation like, hey, dude, like, time to put some more money into this Roth IRA. It's the simplest thing. He's waiting tables and he's, you know, he's a server, he's going to school and doing all this stuff. And he has, you know, a couple extra bucks every month. I'm like, throw it off to the side and just start there.
$50 a month, $60 bucks a month.
Whatever it is.
And it makes all the difference. Like, you'll love this one. I had a reader the other day said, hey, Howie, I've been putting $600 into an annuity for the past 10 years. it really isn't getting the returns I thought it would. And I said, how old are you? 42. I'm like, do you have any IRA set up? No. Do you have a 401k? No. Why are you putting money into an annuity, which is something that you may want to put money into if you've maxed out everything else that you have? And he said, you know, I have a cousin who's a financial advisor that told me this was the best way. And I'm like, yeah, you really ought to either beat the shit out of him.
Can he pull his money out of it now?
It can, but Jamie will tell you with annuities, there's penalties, man.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare.
And sometimes So they're called the contingent deferred sales charges, CDSCs. And here's the other thing, and Howard, you probably know this, especially from your Morgan Stanley days. They used to set those up as a retirement vehicle for people that owned their companies, right?
Yeah.
And the catch was, then they would make their contributions to those as an employer, an employee, what have you. The commissions they're just constantly chewing out commissions, because every contribution is another commission check to the advisor. And then you're stuck in that damn thing for 7 to 10 years.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You can't pull that thing out. And, you know, we would sell them whether it was Hartford, whatever annuity it was, we would sell them saying, yeah, but you know what? We have a deal where your principal's guaranteed. Yeah. That was the funniest thing. I used to have to keep a straight face saying that, because it was like, you know, principal guarantee means, hey, if the market crashes and it never comes back, you know, whatever it was on that last day, the lowest, whether it was $150,000, $200,000, that's what you're going to get when you retire. The bottom line is they've done these actuaries for the past 100 years. It's never happened. If it did, pretty much the world's coming to an end. But Jamie will tell you, on those guaranteed annuities, dude, the commissions on those things, $100,000, man, we were getting a $7,000-$8,000 check. It was amazing.
Easy. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And then the hits just keep on giving, right? Because every year you get your trails off of them because of all the investments that are inside those types of contracts. And if you add more money to it, then you're going to, you know, you keep getting the commissions off of it. And, you know, and this is not an, I don't want to bash insurance people, because, but I certainly don't want it to come off that way, but you know, there's a time and a place for annuities. Mm-hmm. It's just not every time. And that's the problem that I found, because I used to coach and train financial advisors in my past life, and they'd come from some big name insurance companies where the reality is that, you know, they're limited to what they can sell, what kind of, you know, weapons are in their arsenal, so to speak. So every problem is solved by insurance, and that's not the way it should be.
Anyone who hasn't passed that Series 7, they're working for an insurance company, they have their life, accident, health, they got their 66. It's the only product they're going to sell, because it's the only one they can sell, you know, and I'll give you a quick example of where annuity is great. I'm dealing with a wealthy client. That client has millions of dollars tucked away everywhere. And all of a sudden that client, say, inherits $250,000 and says, Howie, I don't want to use this. I'm 47 years old. I don't want to touch this till I'm 65. Is there any way I can put it where it's going to grow a little bit, tax deferred? Mm-hmm. Yeah, an annuity. Absolutely. You don't need it. You just want to tuck it away. You have tons of money elsewhere. There's a good idea. That's it.
Absolutely.
So you like to deal with the financial side of divorces, maybe helping people when they get divorced, how they can kind of like stabilize themselves, make some investments. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually just launched a new company focused on divorce financial planning called Allegiant Financial Divorce Solutions. And I'm running it separate from Woodson Wealth Management, which is the RIA I have. But I went through a pretty challenging divorce back in 2017 myself. And I had wanted to get the designation I ended up going and getting was the Certified Divorce Financial Analyst, the CDFA designation. And I had wanted to do this about 10 years ago, maybe even 12 years ago now. And I was coming on after I had finished my CFP designation, I was kind of still in the mode of I might as well just take one more step, because I was already kind of in study mode and had buried myself in the books for a long time. And then the company I was working for at that time was like, you don't really need it. We don't do it here. And sure enough, about 5 or 6 years later, I could have used it for my own situation. But hindsight is 20/20 on that one. But for me, it's there's so many nuances to managing finances through divorce, and preparing yourself to go through that exercise. It's not enough just to hire an attorney, in my opinion. It's just because there are factors that are at play, things like future retirement benefits and taxes and the insurance component, especially. And if you have kids that are involved, there's a ton that's involved in making sure that you're making the right decisions along the way. Because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that were just like me, that when I went through my divorce, it was, was ugly. It was very challenging. It was not amicable at all, not by my doing, but I wanted it to be over incredibly quickly. I was just like, I've had enough. Like we're giving the attorneys are making more money off of this than we're ever going to make. So we might as well just get through this thing. And had I taken the necessary steps and hired a CDFA myself, I probably wouldn't have made some of the mistakes that I made along the way. So yeah, I'm passionate about it, man. I mean, like, you know, my parents were divorced when I was a kid. You know, I went through my own divorce. I see how financially it can financially ruin people. You know, I have 3 or 4 clients that I'm working with right now that are going through a divorce right now. And not leveraging the experience that's out there, like someone like myself to help you navigate it, it can come back to bite you in the long run for sure.
You can get crushed. You're looking, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's when that hits you and you know, you got kids involved and all of a sudden you're like, wow, 25% of my net income. Woo. Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Divorce is a crusher.
Yeah. It's bad. I mean, it's so crazy. And it's so crazy how like people are still rushing. It's like, I always see, she said yes. I'm like, oh man, it's just like, good luck. Lie, love, but oh man.
Yeah. Yep.
It can be brutal. Yeah.
You go to a wedding and it's more like a funeral. Yeah.
By the way, I've done stand up at weddings. My buddy, the last joke you ever make at a wedding is a divorce joke. Nobody. I mean, the bottom falls out. The bottom. So what do you do for these divorcees basically? What is the process?
The process, I mean, well, kind of like we would do in any traditional financial planning engagement, is really just get a sense of what their goals are, right? What is the client at the end of when the dust is settled and they're a single person again, what do they want that to look like? You know, and then in many ways, they can kind of break out the magic wand and say, okay, well, I want this thing to happen, or I want to, you know, buy a new home, or I want to make sure the kids go to, you know, the best schools or whatever it is. And then we can start there and figure out what they're going to need to make that happen. And, you know, we'll sit with them and we have some worksheets that we work through with them where it's, you know, what are your goals? What are your spouse's goals? And because at the end of the day, you want to make sure that it's equitable and you can get through the process. For sure, everybody comes out, you know, hopefully on the winning end. But we'll take them through that exercise of learning what their goals are. We start looking at some of the financial projections, which is, well, where we start is just understanding what their budget is and figure out what do they have coming in? What do they have going out? Is that going to be enough to help them achieve the goals and objectives that they have? And then, you know, we'll help them do things like not so much anymore, but there are some people that we've worked with in the past that have pensions from some of their former employers and trying to divide up pensions and future benefits of what that looks like. A lot of the clients that we work with right now, are in the technology sector. So they have things like the stock options and restricted stock units and employee stock plan and so on and so forth. And we'll help them navigate let's figure out who's going to get what here. When's it going to vest? What is the intrinsic value of the securities that you own right now? And how do we divide this up most equitably? And then it's really just about putting them on a path forward and helping them figure out what their next steps are after the divorce is finalized. One thing that we will do too is work with their attorney to make sure that they're getting a fair and equitable settlement, because attorneys are super smart. I've worked with a ton of them in the past. I had an amazing divorce attorney myself, but they're not necessarily the most mathematically inclined.
Either. Yeah.
Financially, most of them don't know anything.
Definitely some truth to that, because I've had some discussions with some of the attorneys off to the side about, hey, maybe you can help me with my own thing too.
Yeah.
And then when you get into it, you're like, wow, I didn't realize that this was going to be as bad as it is. But so I think there's something to be said about it. I call it creating team you, right? If you're going to go in, if you're going to get divorced, before you vocalize those words and tell your partner that it's time that you want to go in a different direction, you should be thinking about who team you really is. That's my certified divorce financial analyst, my family members, my loved ones, who's going to be here to support me and back me. That's your attorney. you know, front, and just figure out who you're going to be able to surround yourselves with during that, going through this exercise, because you're going to need them. You're certainly going to need them.
How many times do you hear when you sit down with someone, they just put their hands in their face and they say, I was just coming after my 401k.
Yeah.
I used to hear that all the time, and I was like, oh, Jesus. Ah. Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. It happens for sure. There have been some, and this was even before I launched the new company and started down the path of focusing a lot of my energy on the divorce financial planning. I mean, over the years, there have just been some really ugly situations. You know, you have people trying to hide money, which do not do. We will find it. We will find it. All it will take is us taking a look at your pay stubs, which, by the way, you're legally bound to provide to your ex-spouse. We're going to find it. There's and your documents from your P&L statements and everything else from your business. If you own a business, a good attorney and a good CDFA, they're going to find that information. So you might as well just be forthcoming with it.
So let me ask you something. So I know this is like a really hard thing for people to do, in particular men, right? So a lot of times, maybe not all the times, but more times than not, a grown man is bringing a lot of financial wealth to the relationship, right? Not all the time. You know, it's definitely changing more and more. And let's just even say this, we're going to do it from the woman's point of view as well. Mm-hmm. Is there things you can do that will help that you should set up before? And everyone knows a prenup and stuff like that, but are there like other things that we could do, or anyone getting married could do, to be like, listen, I love you, but you know, yeah, I have to make sure I'm secure if you decide to bolt on me. Okay. And I'm not giving you half of all my shit that I've been working my ass for. And which is a hard conversation to have.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially
my girl didn't have a problem.
What's that, Howie?
My girlfriend didn't have a problem having it with me.
Oh, really, too?
She does really well. And I was like, you know, I'm thinking the marriage thing, we could really get this going. I've known her for 30-something years. And she's like, nah, you know what? It's going really well right now.
Yeah.
It's going, you know. Do you think
we should? Howie, no disrespect. Your girlfriend could do way better, bro.
She really could. She really could. No doubt.
You're going to marry up. Is that what that is?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. She's a go-getter. Yeah.
Way
up. Okay. It's easier when you're dealing with things like cash and investments, because you can compartmentalize that stuff, right? You can, here's my cash, here's your cash, here's our cash, and the same thing with investments in retirement accounts, and all that stuff can be held separately. It's when people don't pay attention to commingling other assets. You know, they have an inheritance from grandma and grandpa that they, you know, they get a $100,000 check from when grandpa passed away or something, and then they put it into their joint account. Or they decide, well, you know, I can't buy a house for myself, and you don't make enough money to buy a home for yourself. So let's combine forces and we'll buy a home for ourselves. And then now you have this joint asset, which is very difficult to divide up unless you're going to sell it later on. I think the biggest thing people can do is really just pay attention to how they own their investments and how they treat them during the time that they have them. Because when you go through, like, one of the biggest things they teach you as you're going through the training and the education that you know, which was about a year long for me to go through the CDFA program, it was all about learning which states have community property rules and or tenancy in common or what have you, and learning how the property can change over time based on what you're doing with it. You know, so paying attention to those inheritances and other investments is going to be crucial. There's no real magic bullet, though, right? I mean, unless you legally get a prenup and you did figure out who's going to get what if you know the shit hits the fan, you're just going to be very cognizant of how you handle the property that you do have.
So what do you think about, and well, we won't keep you much longer, but what do you think about the football player that put all of his assets in his mother's name? So when she divorced him, he technically didn't own anything.
I had not heard that. Who was this?
It was a famous European football player, and he put all. And granted, those are different laws. But yeah, Johnny, can you look that up real quick?
That wouldn't work in the United States, man.
I was just going to say. I was just going to say that.
Yeah,
there would certainly be. And I'm not an attorney, but I just can see how this would all play out in the United States courts. She would be getting something. Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said about the legal aspect of like how you change the ownership of it legally, but also, you know, the benefit she earned, you know, while she was living with him or married to him or whatever for that many years. I mean, she earns, there's something to be said about the earnings that he had that belongs somewhat to her too. Right. I had not heard that, but nice try, but I don't think it would
fly. You know, I'm trying to find this from a good source here. There are a couple of sketchy...
but it's been everywhere. I think it was even on ESPN.
Let's see.
It's probably all over TikTok, so we should just believe everything.
Yeah. TikTok is chaos, dude. Yeah. TikTok is chaos. Well, what is your is there a website or anything, Jamie, our listeners can go and find you at?
Yeah, absolutely. The main website right now is woodsonwm.com. So it's Woodson Wealth Management. So woodsonwm.com. That's the main website we use. I'm still working on, my plan is to launch the divorce financial planning firm, you know, company officially July 1st. So we're working on the website right now and social media and so on for there, that business. But the business that I run and I've been running for the last 3 years now is Woodson Wealth Management. And my bio is up there. My contact info is there. You know, social media, all that other stuff is there as well. You can, you know, schedule some time to talk with me if somebody's, you know, going down the divorce path or just, you know, has some questions about their own financial planning stuff.
Okay, and I can read this for you real quick if you want. Now, this is not this is from something called the Hudson Reporter, and it's submitted content. It's not written in any style that I recognize. Moroccan footballer Achraf Hakimi. This guy was accused of rape by a 24-year-old woman.
Okay, all right.
So his wife wanted to divorce him. Her name is Hiba Abouk, and she's an actress, a Spanish actress. She was left stunned in court after discovering that Hakimi, despite earning millions of euros playing with PSG and the Moroccan national football team, owns nothing in his name, according to Spanish daily Marca and other sources. Abouk, a Spanish actress, like I said, filed for divorce in March and requested half of Hakimi's fortune, only to discover that all of his properties and assets were registered under his mother's name. During the ongoing divorce proceedings, it was revealed that Hakimi, 24, placed 80% of his wealth in his mother's name, including houses, cars, clothes, jewelry, etc. As the sixth highest paid footballer in Africa, the PSG player reportedly earns a staggering $215,000 a week. So, yeah, that was his play. Now, I don't know whether that was successful.
A week?
That's not bad.
Yeah.
It's not bad. Yeah,
I would just say all the readers listening to this show right now, listen to what Jamie's telling you, because unlike a lot of the people we've had on this show, Jamie's an actual CFP. That's a certified financial planner. He's worked for some of the big firms. If you call him up, he's going to sit down with you. He's going to talk to you about proper asset allocation, diversification, fixed income. He's going to talk to you about things that we always talk about on this show. But this is a guy that you can actually sit down and you can put your trust in, because let me tell you, I've heard some shit as far as some people we've had on here, people I see on the net, and I just pray to God nobody gives them money, man, because it's gone.
I appreciate that. And that, yeah. The soccer players, the football player, whatever they call it, you know, he sounds like a stand up guy.
Yeah, real.
Yeah, I mean, that's all alleged. I haven't seen anything that he's been.
I've seen this story in a lot of places. So
there's another story that's not. It's also not. It's all just gobbledygook as far as style. But Achraf Hakimi divorce: as per Wealth, I guess Wealth magazine. I don't know. Achraf Hakimi, they spelled his name wrong there. Will reportedly receive half of ex-wife Hiba Abouk's net worth for filing for divorce based on the allegations of infidelity. I don't know.
It's weird.
It's almost saying that because he has no net worth, she's actually going to end up owing him money.
That is so nuts.
But it's not, I wouldn't believe this because it's not. I mean, they randomly capitalizing words in the story.
That's just crazy, dude. That is just nuts. All right, Jamie. Well, we appreciate you coming on. Yeah. We didn't get through all the talking points, but that means we got to have you back. If you're willing to slum with us again and come and hang out with us, we'd love to talk to you again. And we'll make sure to put your links in. Guys, if you're going through any of this, you think Jamie might be able to help you. If you're going through some love situations and you need some help financially, he's the guy to hit up. And we're very thankful that you spent a little time with us, Jamie. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much, guys.
Until next time. Thank you, Jamie. That was great. It's always good when we have smart people on the show.
Yeah.
He was right. Awesome. Just you two just going at it with your financial talk. Yeah.
That's good it. Shit.
So, Johnny, we did a follow-up on Pepe. Tell us about it real quick.
Well, it's just up. I mean, it's up an insane percentage. It's gone. I mean, people have taken profits now. It's gone back down some. But let's see. Dogecoin rival Pepe drops after value nears $2 billion. It was reaching $2 billion, though, the value of this thing, which used to be at one point kind of worthless.
Come on, Coinbase. Let's get back to wild. Let's come on, crypto. Get back to the Wild West. Let's go. Let's go.
Pepe's good, but I don't know, man. I like Hex better. I like Hex a lot better.
You're
man.
Having a great hair day, dude.
It's not bad.
It looks good. It looks good.
It's just
all right, Johnny. Let's get before we go to the exclusive, elusive fun for the whole family.
Can I just want to read one story real quick. This is so funny. It just makes Jay-Z look like an idiot. So, Block Incorporated, their board members, some of their investors are suing the company for buying Jay-Z's title, the streaming service, because it was just such a terrible business decision. That was just a terrible business that they got into. I think it's like a pension fund in Florida. So I'm just going to read this. A Delaware judge on Tuesday dismissed the shareholder class action seeking to hold Jack Dorsey and other board members at Block Inc. liable for approving payments to the for the company's purchase of Jay-Z's streaming service Tidal. This is where it gets funny, though. Chancellor Kathleen McCormick in Delaware Chancery Court said that Florida pension fund leading the case did not show that Block's directors acted in bad faith, though the purchase, it seemed, by all accounts, a terrible business decision. So, I mean, she just shit talks Tidal throughout the whole decision. She's like, even though this was basically worthless Tidal, they did not do it in bad faith. They called it a quote, $300 million bar tab to hang out with Jay-Z is what they're calling it in the lawsuit. Isn't that hilarious? I think what you saw here was them trying to be like Apple, what Apple did with Beats. They were trying to do with Jay-Z's title, and it just completely tanked. Worthless.
Jesus Christ.
Thought that was funny.
I mean, so Binance is done, correct? They're done?
Well, let me pull it up. Hold on.
And that has no effect on you guys.
No. It might actually be
less than,
I suppose,
zero.
It could be good.
Yeah.
But they just resumed withdrawals yesterday. So, but this is their second pause, of course. And they've said that now they're going to adjust fees and start changing the network they're on to make things get a little bit faster. But network congestion has always been a problem for Bitcoin, you know. So.
All right. Okay.
You got a pick for us this week, Howie?
Yeah, man, I got a pick. And we're going back to Commie Town, man, for China. We're going back to we're going back to Vachina. And I like Alibaba, BABA.
Alibaba and the 40.
We have banked on this thing in the past. We've made some dough on it. It's down to 82.42. Maybe jumping in this thing tomorrow. I really like it at this price, man. I like Baba. Love it. Nice. We've banked on this thing in the past. I like it.
All right, good deal. Take us to Patreon, Samuel.
Guys, it's time to hang it and bang it in the Patreon. Let's go. Patreon.com/CashDaddies. Come get weird. See you over there.